My sermon is literally titled, Don't Follow Me, so you should stop applauding now. Well, good morning. It is always great to be with you, and I am excited for what I believe God has put on my heart to share with all of you this morning. To start, what I'd like to do, I'd like to read our passage, and then I want to tell a couple stories. We have a lot of our younger friends in here today, so I want to tell some stories that all of us might connect with and maybe laugh at me a little bit along the way. Someone said yes. In Mark chapter 1, verse 16 through 18, it says this. As Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come, follow me, Jesus said, and I will make you fishers of men. At once, they left their nets and followed him. To help us think about this story, I want to tell you about one of the houses I purchased. Anyone in the room ever purchased kind of a fixer-upper type of house? Few of us in the room. Now, something to note about me right up front, I am not the handyman. So when something goes awry, my typical answer is, let's Google that, or let's look on YouTube, or let's call somebody who actually knows what they're doing. And so among the things in this house that our family purchased was a dishwasher that needed to be replaced. We got the house, the inside, you know, when a dishwasher kind of gets really old, it used to be white inside, and now it's some multitude of colors that should probably not be there because somebody put spaghetti in there at one point. But it was needing to be replaced, and so we went to Best Buy and we looked around, and because I'm cheap, I like to go and get the open box items, and often they don't come with everything you need. Sometimes the things they don't come with are the instructions. Now, for somebody who knows what they're doing, that's not a problem, but for me, this spelled trouble, and I'm notorious for trying things, potentially breaking them, and then breaking them somehow even more. And so my wife knew that I get antsy as well, and I want to install things. I don't like things just getting delivered and sitting there forever. I'll try to fix something, which is trouble for everyone. I remember this dishwasher got delivered without the instructions, had what appeared to be everything I needed, though. I even went to YouTube and found a video that said, here's how you install a dishwasher. And I started the video, and it was kind of boring at first. And I thought, man, they're not getting to it. And I just kind of skipped about 3 minutes of the video, and I started there. And I'm like, this is really easy. There's just like a couple things you undo, and you know, some nozzle thing. I don't know. I don't know the words. But it's okay. I'll figure it out. And so I was eyeballing it in the morning, and my wife said, I know what you're thinking. I know that you want to install that. Please, please do not do it. Wait for me. My wife is much more of the handy person than I am. She's just far more intelligent than me in general. And so she knew what I was thinking in my mind. And I was like, oh, okay. I will. I'll listen. I'll do the thing. And she's like, you know, we'll get the instructions together when I get home. We'll figure it out. Do not do this without me. The door shut. My oldest daughter was about 5 at the time. I looked at her, and she looked at me just kind of like, don't do it. And I smiled like I'm gonna. And sure enough, I started going to the dishwasher. And I knew you had to kind of unscrew it from the wall, and I kind of pull it out, and I look behind it. I get a little flashlight in there, and I'm looking, and I'm like, I can do this. There's some hose-looking thing. There's a power outlet, and I'm smart enough to know before you work on water, you turn the power off, okay? I'm smart. I just want to say that up front. Then I went to go unplug the other thing. Some of you who know what to do, I heard an oh no already. And I know some of you professionally work on this stuff, and you're just, your head is in the palm of your hand now because you know the stupidity of my decision. I forgot to turn off the water. And if you've ever unplugged a hose that just has water going, it literally just pressure of water just shooting out. And I'm underneath here with this flashlight, and the next thing I know, it's fine, and then water just shooting at me over and over and over again, and I can't get the hose to go back because it's just shooting so hard, and water is beginning to fill up. My 5-year-old is just like this. And kids in the room, if you see your parents make bad decisions like this, the best answer is to do this. Just walk away. Walk away, let mom find out later, which is exactly what happened. But I'm trying to fix it, and I don't know what to do, and I'm not really coherent enough to figure out. I probably should go try to turn the water off. I try other things first. I start yelling at my 5-year-old, go get a bucket, I need a bucket. And she goes, and she comes back, and she has the dog dish. And I said, not that bucket. And she's like, I'm 5. I don't know what bucket you need. I'm like, the bucket outside. Go get, there's a bucket. And in the meantime, I'm just trying to like soak up water with my body. Like I'm on the ground. Water is filling up in my new house, my new kitchen. We have 2 levels in our house too. And so the water is beginning to get over to the stairwell. And I'm afraid a waterfall is going to begin to form. And it just kind of, I see the trajectory of the morning and I'm just like, oh no. And this is about 9 in the morning. Not a great day to start your day. Not a way, great way. And my daughter comes back. She's got a bucket, finally. She did the thing I asked. And I grab the bucket. And I said, give it to me. And I hold it with the hose. But the hose is doing this. Because it has no control. And I put the bucket as close into the hose. I can't like grab the hose. And all that's happening is it's spraying in the bucket and spraying out the bucket and filling my house up more and more and more with water. And finally, I get the smarts to go, I think I need to turn the water off. Finally. And I go under the sink. And I'm feeling pretty proud. And I can't find the shutoff valve. And I panic. But I remembered that my parents showed me how to turn water off at the street level. And I knew how to do that. And so I ran down to the street level, and I got the water finally shut off. I'm soaking wet. We had this hill kind of a driveway, and I'm walking back up just embarrassed. And I walk inside. Again, we had only been in this house for maybe 2 weeks. And there's about an inch or two of water in my kitchen, living room, and we have the waterfall that I was worried about. I look around. My daughter is soaking wet. My dog is trembling out of fear. And I'm just covered. I spent the rest of my day grabbing every towel, every blanket, every shirt, anything that could potentially soak up water. And by about 4 o'clock, when my wife finally got home, it still wasn't dry. And I remember her walking in the door, looking around, and I just said, I should have waited for you. I don't know if you can identify with this story, hopefully not that literal version of the story, but I don't know if you can identify with that reality that sometimes we feel like we can do a better job. Sometimes we feel like, you know what, I know that this is the plan, but I've got my idea, and I'm going to try my idea and see where that gets me. And sometimes we try our idea, and we fail, and we still won't back down. Over and over and over again, we repeat the same mistake, thinking it's going to be different this time. But it ends up being the same problem over and over and over again. I have found myself often in my life making a mess of things because I followed my own self, or I was following somebody else who I probably shouldn't have. This is very true when I go on youth trips. I go on youth ministry trips a couple times a year, and I am notorious for not giving the address for where we're going. My literal phrase, and some of my youth leaders are in the room, and they're laughing because they have experienced this firsthand, is just follow me. It'll be fine. Just follow me. You will get in the cars. You kind of know where we're going. You don't need the address. Just follow me. I'll get you where we need to go. And sure enough, without fail, within 5 minutes of the trip, I'm either so far behind everyone or I'm so far ahead of everyone that we're all just kind of doing our own thing and we're aimless and wandering and lost. I remember our last youth ministry trip with our middle schoolers in June. I literally said this. It was a Sunday morning, so in my brain, I thought, there's not going to be a lot of traffic on the road. We got to get to this one place. We had to drop off a student a little bit early with their family, and I didn't want to go through the hassle of giving everyone all the directions, and so I just told my drivers, just follow me. It's going to be okay. And I remember one of my leaders said, Ryan, we always do that, and you always leave us. And I was like, not this time. And if you know the stories I'm telling today, if you can see where it's headed, you know I left them. And I remember I thought they were behind me, and I just took an exit, and no one else saw it, and so everyone separated, and it happens all the time. And you may be here this morning and think, yeah, but Ryan, I'm clearly smarter than you. I know to turn water off, and I know to give people an address. Really, this is not a Ryan problem. This is a humanity problem. All of us are flawed and in need of a Savior. Each and every one of us this morning, if we follow ourselves, that only leads us to trouble. It doesn't matter who you are or how well put together you might be in your head or outwardly. It doesn't matter. And to prove that point, I went on a staff retreat. We went on a little staff retreat a couple weeks ago. And Scott Anderson, our executive director, who's not here today, which is why I can tell this story, but I got permission. It's okay. I remember we were all gathering in the parking lot that morning to go. And I knew we were going up to Big Bear, but I didn't have an address. And suddenly I found myself on the receiving end of the thing that I do so often. And I asked Scott, I said, Scott, I don't have the address. Can you give me the address? He said, don't worry about it. Just follow me. But if you know Scott, that's a pretty trustworthy reality. So I thought, okay, no worries. And we get in the car and we're divided up. It's Dave, Floyd, and Scott in their car. And it's myself, Kathy, and Bruce in my car. And we're following, and Kathy is sitting up front. And Kathy knows the area a lot better than I do. And I remember we were in the middle lane, and Kathy is looking around like this, just kind of, looks like we should be turning off pretty soon. And I said, but Kathy, Scott's right over there. And he told me to follow him. And she said, I know, I just have a feeling that we're going to be taking an exit pretty soon. And I said, well, what should I do? She said, I think you should maybe get over just in case. I'm like, okay, it won't hurt. So I get over, and there's an exit coming up, and Kathy's pointing at this exit saying, I think this is the exit. But Scott still hasn't made a turn. And in the middle of me saying, Kathy, I don't think, without any fail, Scott just goes, across three lanes, it might have been 20 lanes, I don't know, the story was more dramatic in my mind when it was happening. And I just remember them cutting across, and I looked at Kathy, and I was like, I'm glad I didn't listen to Scott, because he would have led us astray. But the point is, no matter who it is, we're all human, and we're flawed. And there's really only one person that we should be following and trusting with the leading of our lives. And there's a story that we read at the beginning in Mark chapter 1 that I'm just going to read it again. I want you to listen to it this time with that kind of idea in our heads. So as Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come, follow me, Jesus said, and I'll make you fishers of men. And at once, they left their nets and followed him. when Jesus is walking along and he looks at these men were fishermen. This was the life that they knew. Everything about their reality revolved around fishing. And Jesus walks up and he says, I want you to drop your nets. He's saying, for you to follow me, you have to leave all of this behind. But I want to show you a new way of living. He uses this phrase, I want to make you fishers of men. Well, for these men, if fishing was everything they knew, then that meant life. Because fishing was a way of eating. It was a way of making money. All of these things are really important to the story and understanding why Jesus says, I want to make you fishers of men. He's telling them, I want to give life to everyone. And I want you to come and join me. But to do so, you have to drop your nets. You have to drop the life that you have been living your entire existence. The things that you think you know are best, I'm going to show you a new way. My friends, there's a reason that we talk about the reality of becoming a new creation in Christ when we live into that reality. It's because we are literally saying, I am dying to my old self to embrace the new. The idea of death and resurrection is all over Scripture. It's not just the Easter sermon. Following God is all about death and resurrection. But to experience the new life that God is calling each and every one of us into, we have to let go of all our thoughts, assumptions, sometimes beliefs. We have to let go and abandon something so we can actually embrace this life of love and grace and forgiveness that Christ has called all of us to live into. We are too tempted to live life for ourselves. Or we get too caught up in following a person. But the reason the sermon is titled, Don't Follow Me, is because church, sermons, all of this, has never been about following the person who sits up here or stands up here. It's about following the one who died on this cross so that you could experience new life. But it requires a sacrifice. A couple weeks ago, my family and I went to PetSmart, and we walked in no dog in our hand, and we walked out with a new dog in our hands. And my house is a little bit of a zoo already. We've got a tortoise, we've got a Yorkie puppy, we've got two cats. One of them is evil. One's just evil. It's mean. It looks mad all the time. Anyone else have an evil cat? You wake up in the middle of the night, you go to get water, it's there just watching you. You can only see the eyes. It's that kind of a cat. It's waiting to claw you as you're getting dressed in the morning. I love it. It only likes my oldest daughter, and for some reason, I'm the one who picked this cat out, but that's kind of the animal situation at our house. But we were talking about getting a new puppy, and so we walked in to PetSmart on Pet Adoption Day, and we walked out with this really adorable, amazing new dog. And we, our other dog is named Lucy, so we named this one Ricky. There you go. And they're in love, and we love it. And so we got Ricky, we brought Ricky home, and Ricky was a great dog. He is a great dog. But for the first couple days, he's uncertain. He's walking around trying to figure out, where do I fit into this household? And so he latched on to me. I'm the one who kind of pet him first. And he saw me and he recognizes me as the master. So anywhere I went, he followed. Maybe you have an animal like that or a child who's just constantly attached to you at the hip, right? And I loved that. And the dog followed me. Anytime I would go sit on the couch, he would be in my lap. Anytime I go in bed, he'd be licking my face and then curl up and lay down. And for the first couple days, he kept doing this. And it was wonderful. And then he found the cat. And that's a bad recipe because he found the wrong cat. He saw this other cat is named Piper. He saw Piper from a distance, and Piper usually hides, so it's not a surprise that maybe the dog didn't see Piper for a couple days, but Piper was hiding and finally made herself known. She's like, I'm here, and I'm here to stare into your soul. And Piper sees the dog and starts doing the cat growl thing. You guys know what I'm talking about? Kind of like it's a warning purr. I don't know what you call it, but the cat starts giving the warning purr, and the dog sees it. And the dog kind of looks back at me and looks at the cat and looks at me and looks at the cat. And I look at it, and I say, Ricky, no. That's trouble, thinking he can understand English, which most dogs can, I'm pretty sure. But I say, no, Ricky, no. He got a little bit closer. No, Ricky. And over the next couple days, Ricky kept kind of pushing it, getting a little bit further away from me and a little bit closer to the cat. And one night, I'm making dinner. I'm sitting there, I'm at my counter, and I'm doing all the things that I need to be doing. And I have headphones in. So this is how I know this was loud, because I have my headphones up very high usually when I'm making dinner. The next thing I know, I'm making dinner, stirring things in this pot, and I hear the highest, what I can only describe as a scream, a blood-curdling scream come out of my hallway that was like just pure pain and torture. And I didn't know what had happened. I take my headphone out. I look, and I'm kind of like this, trying to figure out what's going on, and I see Ricky. And Ricky is on his bottom, and he is dragging himself, yipping. Yip, 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 woo! And he runs off and hides. And I had no idea what happened. And so I kind of like go around the corner and I look, and there's Piper smiling. I know she was smiling, but she's smiling. She's so proud of what she did. And I remember I told Ricky, because he can understand me, I told Ricky, I told you not to do that. But I think that's a great example for us of how frequently God is saying, leave the life that you are so desperately trying to find fulfillment and happiness in. I want to show you something new. But we continue to go back and back and back into the same ways of living. There's an old proverb that talks about, it's like a dog returning to its vomit. I think we use dogs as metaphors because often they're not very bright. They kind of continue to go back into the old patterns, the things that they just kept doing. But this morning, my friends, we're talking about what it looks like to follow God as we're closing out this series together. And following God really is about what Jesus is asking of these fishermen. Will you drop your nets? Will you drop your assumptions about what it means to follow me? Will you drop your opinions for the sake of love? Will you drop your attitude toward others to find grace beyond your understanding? To gain something, we have to lose something. It's death and resurrection. And Christianity is all about resurrection. But resurrection doesn't come without the pain of death. We talk all the time about plant metaphors here. We have grow ministries. And to truly grow, someone pointed out to me that a seed, when a seed is planted, it must break. Something has to break for something new to be birthed. And so maybe you're here this morning and you have been trying, just like my dog, to live life the way you think you know best, but it keeps ending in pain or tragedy or brokenness. Maybe you're here this morning and you're tired and weary because the life you have been living is really getting you nowhere, and you're not feeling the love that you always have heard about. My friends, this morning is an opportunity for each and every one of us to shift the way we live. Every single morning when we wake up, Jesus is asking all of us to drop our nets and follow him. So this morning, as we think about that reality, what's your net? What is the thing you need to let go of so you can actually step into a relationship with this God who loves you so incredibly much? What is the thing you need to abandon so you can find life? And for each of us, it looks a little bit different. But that's our invitation to you this morning. We are going to continue worshiping here together through music. But at the end of the service, we're going to have our Stephen ministers on the side. And if you're here this morning and you're wrestling with this idea, whether or not you've been in church your whole life, this is a whole sermon series about a fan versus a follower. And fans can sit in the pews their whole life. And just because we've gone to church our entire life doesn't necessarily mean that we've made the decision to actually follow. And I'm not making that assumption about anyone in this room, but we have to be honest with ourselves deep inside of our souls. Am I actually following God? Am I taking the steps that I need to, braving whatever may come? And the Bible is full of story after story after story of Jesus inviting, of God inviting people to leave what was comfortable and step into what might be scary, but it's something beautiful that none of us can even begin to comprehend. So that's my challenge to you this morning, to really embrace a life of following God, abandoning yourself and the things that you think are best, and fixating your mind, your soul, your heart on what Christ says we must do, which is to follow him, to draw closer to him, and try to dig deeper and deeper into that relationship. Grace and peace be with you.